Seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of October, the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for coming by. It is Monday, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you want to engage with us, elect...
You almost made it to the box.
She was on your way. Best show ever. All right. If you'd like to engage with us electronically, you can do that as well. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I wonder, is there some sort of a device that we could bring in here to do some sort of a spore count just on the air inside the studio?
I covered my mouth.
I'm not saying that the spores are coming out of you.
Okay.
I mean, that'll be kind of weird. I'm not saying that you're spore covered. I'm saying that that the air in here seems to be a little bit dirty. That's all I'm saying.
I've been sneezing since the second I got in here today.
Is that bad? No.
Oh.
Can you sweeten my microphone just a little bit? Thank you very much. But it's the same thing that we all get in here and everything's fine. I've told this story 1,000 times now, but we...
I know, everyone knows.
No, but there are always people joining the program who don't know about our respiratory ailments caused by the studio, and they might think that we just don't know how to breathe properly. But Sarah was fine this morning, walking in and suddenly hacking and sneezing and coughing and so forth. All right. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email us, rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Doesn't help, by the way, that we never did read that story. I kind of gave the punchline to it, but we didn't read the actual story about the 10 most germ-laden workplaces. And it was like number one was police station, number two was Alaskan fishing boat, number three, radio station.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the others were, but we were number three. Fantastic. All right, it's 503-733-2970. It is Monday the 23rd? 23rd, yes.
I believe so, yes.
All right. Well, we got other stuff to get to as well. But let me welcome, without further ado, to the Rick Emerson Show, our good friend and stenographer.
A postman is a person in your neighborhood.
Do you think we'd learn to check? Yeah, that was a bad way to start the day. Mailman Chris, hello, sir.
Should I whisper?
No, it's not you. It's not you, it's me. We just had your theme turned a little too loud there. And people on the air, or people who are listening to this, they probably don't even notice it because it all gets balanced out by the time that they... Occasionally, we will fire a sound effect. We probably sound incompetent and crazy because we will play a sound effect and then we will all scream in pain. Like lobsters. If, in fact, lobsters scream. And that seems to be a matter of some debate on the program. Maybe we can resolve that later on. I'm just saying that sometimes we'll fire something, a sound, an intro piece of music, some sort of a drop-in, and we will all shriek because it sounds, it's like 50 times louder than everything else. And so it was with your theme just now. How was your weekend, sir? Satisfying in every way?
It was, absolutely. I don't know if, I've never heard you talk about it. I don't know if you're a fan of... Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas?
Am I a fan of The Nightmare Before Christmas? Of course I am.
Okay, well, they just brought it back out on Friday in the theaters.
Is it 3D? Now, I didn't... Is that already out? I didn't know if that was actually a thing that was coming out. Where is it playing at?
Two places. One in Vancouver and Bridgeport Village out in Tigard.
Please tell me it's at Cinetopia.
No.
Oh, that's too bad.
No.
Where is it playing in Vancouver?
I'm sorry, I don't know where. I went to Bridgeport and Tigers.
Now, is this... I had heard about this, but and there's a new soundtrack, too, where it's a bunch of rock bands and punk bands covering the soundtrack to it's a Nightmare Before Christmas. Nightmare Before Christmas was one of those movies that did very poorly. People don't realize this because it's kind of come into its own as a cult classic, but that movie did really badly in the theaters. It came out... Nightmare Before Christmas is right alongside Office Space and Shawshank Shawshank Redemption, movies that nobody saw. They came out, and everyone... Those are all movies now that everybody says they saw in the theater that nobody really did, because they because it just bombed horrifically. But it immediately, the goth kids all immediately latched onto it, and all the kids, the drama nerds all latched onto it, and now it's kind of coming to its own as a film that is watched both on Christmas and on Halloween. So you saw the 3D Nightmare Before Christmas. Was it good?
It is. Well, I mean, just being able to see it on a big screen again is fantastic, but the 3D, it's really interesting 3D. It's not like the cheap...
It's not like the stupid red and blue thing, is it?
Right. It's the same type of 3D technology that they use at the Disney parks for, like, Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Oh, which is fantastic. Honey, I Shrunk the Audience is the best 3D effects I've ever seen in my life, and that was like 10 years ago.
Now, I will put out a word of caution.
It's going to give you a migraine.
No, it really doesn't, simply because there's not a lot of stuff that, like, really comes flying out at you.
Right.
You don't, it's not like the cheesy stuff. But what it does is it really, and this sounds really nerdy, it breaks the fourth wall. It lets everything look full and rounded rather than flat on a screen.
Well, because they haven't changed the movie, right? All they did was make it's the same Nightmare Before Christmas, just in 3D. They don't have some scene where Jack Skellington, let me throw a cigarette right at the camera for no reason.
Exactly. Right, and then there's a few things that, you know, that they throw at you where, like, you know, a pumpkin gets thrown, which was in the movie, but now they've, you know, made it so it looks... But it costs $2 more.
That's fine. Doesn't matter.
Because you have to pay for the glasses, but then you get to keep the glasses, and I think they're going to bring this on DVD in 3D.
Does that even work? I didn't even think you could do 3D at home on your TV. This is now we're entering total, like, Bruce Agler territory, but I didn't think you could do 3D at home on your TV unless you did the stupid red and blue version.
I think you can with these type of glasses as well, but it's never going to be as good.
Nah, it doesn't matter. I'll go see it. So it's in Tigard in Vancouver.
Yeah, and
maybe I'll do that
tonight. We went to the Bridgeport Village one out there in Tigard. It's a brand new place.
Fantastic.
Really nice.
Excellent.
Great movie.
All right. Let's see. What do we got coming up today? Today, we're going to talk about the hottest picture you've ever seen in your entire life. Or it may not be the hottest picture ever, but I mean, for this week... I mean, the week has peaked early. It was like 8 o'clock this morning, and I got like 100. Tom Likas has this thing where he says if any story that gets sent to him by like more than 100 people in the audience, he talks about regardless. Doesn't matter whether he cares about it or not. If 100 people send him the same story, he knows that it's worth talking about. So it is with this picture. I opened up my email box this morning, and like every fourth email was about this picture. So we'll talk about this. CNN senior political correspondent Candy Crowley is going to join us later on this hour. Look at that. Look at Tim Riley. Tim Riley, he was agog just now. The mention of Candy Crowley.
Yeah, she's
a heavyweight.
She is.
Because we're players.
She is.
First Tina Yothers, then Candy Crowley. Is there anything that we can't do on the show? So we'll talk to her later on. I swear to God, it's about the percent. This is what she's talking about. She's talking about the perception that Democrats can't win anything because they're wimps. So we'll talk about that. Peter Carlin going to join us from the Oregonian. We'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini. You know, breaking the fourth wall, he was just trying to break like the first wall with that guy. I think that he sort of discovered his own persona, though. And I think that Bob Costantini has discovered that his persona is that of the guy who's really dry and dull and just fantastically uninterested and cannot be dissuaded or persuaded by any of my natterings. So we'll talk to him. Britney Spears may be back on the market. We'll talk to Clyde Lewis. I'll see. As it begins, Tim Riley's holding up a big, huge quarter-page article in USA Today. Studio 60 needs a renovation. It's over.
Sorkin's show is not quite ready for prime time.
It's over.
But that's somebody's opinion.
They're reaching for the hand. But perception paces reality, and everybody's reaching for the handle on that program. And lots of stupid people almost die. So there you go, my friend. That's what we got tentatively lined up here.
All right, was the Studio 60 a tease? Are you going to talk about that later?
I don't want to talk. We may not. I don't know. It's just depressing.
All right, so we've got the hottest pictures ever, or at least this week.
Yes.
Candy Crowley from CNN, Peter Carlin, Bob Costantini, Britney Spears, stories, Clyde Lewis, and stupid people almost die.
Indeed, sir. That is exactly what it is. And where are we at push-up-wise?
You're at 54 going into today.
All right. I feel good, though. I feel like we're on the upswing.
And hey, just as a side note for your Britney Spears story, the greatest thing ever was watching rehash clips of the last week, seeing Kevin Federline go on the WWE.
Oh, and get slammed?
And get body slammed.
Oh, I know. It's just when you start praying for, like, a harness to break, or you pray for some sort of a bit of training to go awry, you know what I mean? Just 6 inches to the left or the right, and we'd be rid of that guy forever. We'd never have to hear him sing again. So
he comes out next week, so that would have been nice for it to be posthumously.
Maybe. Excellent. On that note, thank you, sir. There you go. There's
that
mailman, Chris, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. All right. It's 503-733-2970. That's the worst picture of Vince Vaughn I've ever seen.
I know.
Scrolled right by. Go back up there.
No, I had it on my website a long time.
Scroll back. Oh, look at that. That's no good. He looks like Ralph Cramden.
Old.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Oh, let's get one more of these. Joe, hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
What's up?
Nightmare Before Christmas is playing on 164th Street in Vancouver.
It's so wrong. Why is it in Vancouver and Tiger, but not in Portland? It seems like Portland would be the bigger market for that.
Because Portland sucks, dude. Vancouver rules. What can I tell you? But anyway, I went and saw the movie last night.
It's good
night
to have pride. And what?
I said my wife and I took our 2 snot bags to see that movie yesterday.
Okay.
And anything that comes out with this type of 3D, this Disney 3D, you've got to go see it, dude, because it is fabulous. I mean, it's an honest experience that you will enjoy. The movie almost becomes secondary because it is so crisp and clear, and it is literally, I mean, they've finally come up with something that is a realistic 3D type movie.
Well, I hope so, man, because I've had, it's like 50 years of broken promises. 3D, Tim, what was the first 3D movie, Tim, do you know?
1955.
Do you know what it was? It wasn't Creature from the Black Lagoon, was it?
It may have been.
I don't know. Aaron's on his honeymoon, so he's not here to answer these questions. But it's like a way through the chip in his head. But I mean, even like 20 years before I was born, they were trying to get 3D right. And I mean, my whole life. Sarah, have you ever seen a 3D movie in the theater?
Yeah, I saw Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
But I mean, a real full-on, like a feature-length motion picture.
No.
In the theater. See? So it's like that. It's the 3D technology is so bad that they just quit doing it for like 15 years. They skipped right from Star Chaser, The Legend of Orin, you know, to Nightmare on Elm Street 7, and then this. Now, is this the same? Did you see the Ghosts of the Abyss 3D, the Cameron thing, Joe?
No, I didn't. This is a Pixar. This is all CGI with Pixar Films and Disney.
All right, so I'm wondering if this is the same technology, because the James Cameron 3D was not bad at all. It was okay.
And this is all, I mean, you know, anything that has Pixar's name on it is good quality.
No, it's true.
Yeah, filmmaking. It's all CGI, but it's phenomenal, Rick. I'm serious. You go see it, and if you don't thoroughly enjoy the graphics, the animation, and the movie itself,
then
I will pay for your ticket.
You will refund my money. Fantastic.
Absolutely, dude, because I guarantee you, as much as you hate Disney, you will dig the hell out of this. And you'll go, I find myself wanting to go see them. Of course, while you're there, then they start showing previews of other 3D movies they have coming out. And I find myself wanting to go see these other movies just so I can be... just so I can see this 3D effect. I don't really even care about the movie.
You need never leave the Couvre again, my friend. All right.
Well, that's what I'm hoping.
Yes. Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. There you go. All right. Joe. Holding it down for the coupe. There you go. Fantastic. All right. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right. Well, I'll have to see that later on. Because I'm a big Nightmare on Elm Street fan. And I'm a big... Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare Before Christmas. But the last 3D film... I'm trying to remember the last thing I saw in the theater. Well, I saw Ghost of the Abyss, which is the Cameron thing. Which is the Titanic documentary done in 3D. Which is pretty amazing, by the way. Because they do that big... that big shot where they're coming into the gloom out of the ocean, and then the bow of the ship just all of a sudden rises out of the darkness, you know, and it's in 3D, which is pretty great. So that's pretty fantastic. But in my all through my whole childhood, man, I remember just seeing one bad 3D film after another. Like I saw Star Chaser, and then I saw Treasure of the Four Crowns, and I saw like God Jaws 3D, and just like endless crap that's never any good. All right, fantastic. Speaking of Nightmare Before Christmas. We should, we'll talk about Aaron's wedding here in just a second, which we went to. And I know I spent a lot of time on it because, you know, it's like 99.999% of the people within the sound of my voice weren't there. So I don't want to drone on about a thing that most people weren't at. But there were some great moments, including a Nightmare Before Christmas moment. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah Stillen. How are you today?
I'm good. I went and got my Halloween costume yesterday, and I bought one for Muppet.
Not a All right. I could have just given you my dogs. I could have given you
no,
Max's.
This is the greatest costume ever.
What is it?
Muppets Wonder Woman.
I've seen that costume.
He is so... Where it's, they make the feet, like the front paws of the feet.
Dressing your dog as a woman.
I know. Well, because I'm going to the celebrity blender party. I was telling you about this, where you have to take two celebrities and mix them together.
Right.
Like,
Now,
so,
are you going to say what you're going as?
Okay, yeah. I'm going as Stevie Wonder Woman. Yeah. So anyway, so I bought my costume yesterday.
And Stevie Wonder Woman just consists of a Wonder Woman outfit with dreadlocks?
No, or braids and braids. Sunglasses instead of a golden lasso. I'm going to have the golden.
Genius. Now, are you wearing like the... Now, because all the men want to know this. Now, are you wearing the full Wonder Woman, like the bustier and
I've
so forth?
I've got the everything.
Yeah. Excellent. Were there going to are there gonna be photos?
Oh, of course.
All right, genius. All right.
No, but Muppet, oh my God, it is the cutest thing I've ever
seen. I have seen the Wonder... Now, see, this is how lame I am. I know the dog costume that you're referring to, because I was...
This stuffed puppet arms that's holding a golden lasso.
And that's the thing, right? Because it's a dog, even if it always looks like the dog is standing right up on its hind legs, right?
Yes,
that's the thing
it's
the
only, yeah, because the costume's only on the front half of the dog, so the front paws are make the feet of the costume. So his front paws are in little boots, and then they're the fake arms up near his shoulder blades.
Now, have you put the costume on him yet?
Yes.
Now, did he resist? Because here's the thing, is that I'm going on like 3 years now of every year Laura buying a new Halloween costume for Max. She puts it on him, and it's like it's like tying sacks on the cat of the feet of a cat. You get that costume on him, and it's like he is immediately rolling all over the floor like an epileptic trying to get the thing off. He won't wear it.
He doesn't really, he doesn't really look sad.
Does he just sit there and look morose?
And all I did, I was sitting there staring at him laughing for like 10 minutes, and he had this depressed look on his face.
Well, yeah, because...
Well, and all they had was a size medium. You know, Muppet's very small, so I have to re-sew the costume so that he can walk in it because the feet are way too long.
Okay, so there you go.
It was only, they didn't have any smalls, and it was only $6, so.
Do you realize you are now going in a matching outfit with your pet to a party?
My friend Lisa and I are going to go take her boyfriend's son trick-or-treating. I'm taking Muppet.
Okay, there you go.
I am
you
lame.
You will get extra candy for that, though. People will find
it
adorable.
I know. A little dog dressed as Wonder Woman? Come on now.
All right, there you go. Fantastic. Now, Max has got, I would make fun, but I mean, Max has got, let's see, I've got a pirate costume that she bought him 1 year. We've got a witch costume she bought him 1 year. I've got like a clown costume she bought. And he's like, he won't wear, you know what it is? Here's the thing with Max is, he's fine if you, with and this, I swear to God, this is the last thing I'll say about dressing pets as Halloween costumes. It's bad enough that I got a goddamn sweater that he wears during the winter. But the problem is he won't wear anything on his head. Like, you try to put anything on his head, and he immediately is just doing this thing where he's like a rodeo bull. Just, like, wheeling around, like, rubbing his head against things, trying to get the hat off.
That's what Muppet did. It was hard to keep the crown on him because he kept shaking.
Let's just staple it right on. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
Well, a freak accident appears to have forced Jason Newsted out of the upcoming debut tour of Rockstar Supernova.
I'm stunned.
A man suffering from amnesia is claimed by his Olympia, Washington relatives. One of TV's pioneering moms passes away. Hillary Clinton's editorial opponent claims she spent millions on plastic surgery and she's still coyote ugly.
It's genius. All right, there you go.
Oh, and a severed body is found on the Amtrak tracks downtown.
That was just a little... That was just a little after dinner mint there at the end there. Oh, and by the way, all right, there you go. Speaking of trains, he's not here to hear this right now, but we should give a shout out to our man Aaron Geek in the City, Duran, who got married over the weekend at really what must be considered pretty much the best wedding that's ever happened anywhere.
Such a cool wedding.
I'm not going to sit and go on about it because nobody was there. I know this is like sitting there and you set up the slide projector in your room to show people the film of your trip to the Grand Canyon or something. I'm just going to say that any wedding that features like an opening scroll, because he got married at the Hollywood Theater, and before the wedding even started, they did the opening scroll on the screen, like Star Wars style, and it was like, you know, it was like Aaron and Jen, episode one,
big behind the vows.
Yeah, big fat geek wedding or whatever. Yeah, and behind the vows. They did a whole documentary beforehand about how they met and blah, blah, blah. And then they march into the Star Wars Imperial Suite, you know, or whatever that thing is. It's like the big suite of all the Star Wars themes. And then there was... God, it was just great. It was the only wedding I've ever been to that had, I mean, the vows were replete with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy references. They and then they played because Jen is a huge Muppets fan. They did that thing that's guaranteed to make everyone in the audience cry, including myself, where at the end they played the, at the end of the actual wedding, they played the Muppet wedding song from Muppets Take Manhattan, and it's all tear-jerking and so forth. But all of those moments paled. All of those moments paled beside this moment. There we are, because there's two parts. There was the wedding, which is in the Hollywood Theater, and then there was the reception later, which is at the, what is it? What was the, where was the reception?
I don't know. It was next to the Friendly Church for Christ's head.
Let's talk about, we'll get talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
And then we got a break here in a second because we got Bob Costantini, and he's a fireball of news energy, not to be missed. But, yeah, so there we are at the Hollywood Theater for Aaron and Jen's wedding, and they did this, and normally, you know, weddings just leave me completely nonplussed. I don't give a rat's ass about weddings most of the time. Because, you know what, you know, one wedding's pretty much the same as another. But you kind of knew Aaron's was going to be different because it was at a theater regardless. You pull up to the theater on the reader board out front, it's like, now showing Aaron and Jen's wedding. And like, yeah, it's all, like, cute. And there's a poster of them inside that looks like the Revenge of the Sith.
I love how it was Aaron and Jen's wedding, and underneath it's, like, another gay movie. I thought that Aaron had them put that on there to be funny. I was like, that's funny. That was an actual one.
No, it was great. And then you go in, and there's a big poster inside, like, they had a movie poster done for their wedding, and it's like them back to back with lightsabers. It was like a Revenge of the Sith poster, and it's got the credits and blah 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 blah. So we go to the theater for the wedding, and they play the Star Wars suite. Aaron comes in along with his many hot bridesmaids and so forth, and best men, groomsmen, and whatever.
I'm sorry about that again.
Oh, we'll talk about that. That's on my list of things to talk about. You just, Lara's working today, so I don't think she'll be chiming in, which is all well, which is probably just as well. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. So the Jen comes in, and a guy comes up. I swear to God, he's a doctor of religion or whatever, and his name was Dr. Phil. And he comes up, and he reads the ceremony. And he had this great thing where they were talking about the ceremony like it was a movie, like blah, 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 some cross-genre, you know, groundbreaking, you know, with many box office returns to come. And then, so as he's conducting the ceremony, he says the following. I swear to Christ, he says this in the wedding. And keep in mind, now, Sarah's there, I'm there, Joni's there. I mean, all the freaks are there. But, like, family's there, too. And, like, parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and deeply religious people of every stripe. People who don't understand our particular brand of juvenile foolishness on this show. So they're all there. The guy who's conducting the service for a wedding says, and so, as you prepare to take your relationship in an exciting new direction. Which is genius.
And only you and Joni and I heard that, and we started laughing.
Oh, my God. It was so hard to keep control. No, but Aaron, I looked up, and I could see Aaron doing that thing, the biting the inside of your mouth. Because what I found out is he didn't know that was going to be in there. He didn't put it in there. Jen, as far as I know, didn't put it in there. The guy put it in there, and I think probably unknowingly, I think it was just a coincidence. So we're doing the wedding, and it's like, good luck on your new direction. And Aaron told me later, he said that he was just like giving a silent prayer to our sweet Lord above, just if I can ever keep control of my life for one moment, let this be, because there would be no way to explain it to his family. Had he just lost control of it, there would have been no way. And Aaron says that he thought we had paid the guy to do it. Aaron's up there getting married, and the priest or whatever it is, the doctor says, blah, 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 Aaron and Jen, their exciting new direction. He says that he swears to that he thought that we had done it. And so I didn't, but man, it couldn't have turned out better. Is this Jen? I thought she was gone. I thought they were all in California. Hey, Jen?
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
How are you?
I'm the first-time caller.
Thank you. This is Aaron's new lovely bride, Jen. I thought you were all, like, in California and whatnot.
Well, far away. I'm actually frantically running around to drop off the marriage license with the county and other stupid stuff like that.
All right. Well, let me just say, first of all, just best wedding ever, by the way.
That was so wonderful.
We heard that from everybody. We heard that from the bartenders. We heard that from the caterers. We heard that from the people who ran the ballroom. Everybody said it.
It was really great. And I'm not going to sit and go on about it forever because I got stuff to do. But I got to say, the actual reception, the highlight of the entire reception was when you guys walked in, and whoever it is had this idea that you guys walked in through a lightsaber, like Honor Brigade, like Knights of Columbus style.
totally Diana from Downtown's idea.
And she was with
orchestrated. It was all her.
Oh man, and with military precision, she was like lining us up and like barking commands about like what parade rest is and like how to hold your lightsaber. And if you,
she's amazing.
She was fantastic. And when you pulled up, when anybody pulled up to the reception, the first thing they did when they when anybody came to the reception, they were greeted by Chris in his full on. It took 3 years to design it. Boba Fett costume. And so when he put the reception, there's Boba Fett like greeting you and like taking you inside. It really was amazing. So
yeah, it was great. And just FYI, the minister is actually one of my friends from college.
Okay, all right.
He and I went to school together, and he wrote the entire sermon homily that was himself.
So the exciting new direction for your relationship was entirely a coincidence, I believe. So fantastic. All right, I think we lost Jen's phone there, but all right, Jen, congratulations to you and Aaron. Best wedding ever. With many unpleasant and uncomfortable moments later on,
talk
about endlessly. That we'll rehash endlessly as the program goes on.
Sometimes I forget that I can't talk to you the way I usually do when we're in front of your wife. And that sounds wrong, but not that way.
You can't call me Sweetie Buns.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. All right. Well, we got lots of show ahead. We'll break here. We got Bob Costantini on the way. Later on, Candy Crowley, CNN senior political correspondent.
Crowley?
Like Candy Crowley?
That's the way I hear Wolf Blitzer pronounce it.
Oh, God. Now I don't even know.
Crowley.
I trust
him
and Wolf
Blitzen. All right. All right. She's coming up later on. Peter Carlin, et cetera, et cetera. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Rick Emerson Show. I bet a nail gun to get this costume on him. Stay!
Wrong.
All right. Hello. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on this hour, we got CNN senior political correspondent Candy Crowley, who's going to talk about the upcoming elections, whether or not the Democrats are spineless weasels who couldn't electioneer themselves out of a wet bag. We got the new news hour coming up at noon. Later on, Peter Carlin, et cetera, so on and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, stand back! Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, journalistic firebrand, Bob Costantini. Hello, sir.
Good morning to all of you folks there.
How are you, Bob?
Just fine. Happy to be back with you again.
And I'm glad to be with you, Bob. I'm glad that we're here having this moment together.
Yeah.
How's life? How are things?
Things are going very well.
All right. Well, let's talk about... I am unclear from one moment to the next what the hell is going on with a whole lot of things. And it was Hillary Clinton who couldn't decide whether she was... I mean, this is not really something you're covering at the moment, but do you know offhand, like as of now, it's 11:35 Pacific time. As of now, has Hillary Clinton, is she running for president in 2008 or is she not?
Well, as of now, 11:35 Pacific time, Hillary Clinton has about $47 million raised in cash, and she probably needs to spend about $5 of it to win re-election in New York. That money is being gathered, needless to say, for a likely presidential bid. That money can be turned over to a presidential bid should she decide to do that. So that's where we come from looking at this 2008 situation and about whether Hillary Clinton will run for president. If you had to bet, you would say yes, more than likely.
And there's the thing, and Senator Barack Obama, it's the same thing, where, and I'm reading this right here, he said over the weekend he has thought about a presidential run in 2008, but has yet to make up his mind. And so this seems, here, let me ask you a really dumb question. Why not just say it? I mean, I know that sounds like really daft and pedantic of me to ask, but what do they gain by trying to be all coy and trying to be all hard to get about it? Why don't they just come out and go, like, yeah, 2008, but this is 2006, and so I'm not going to do anything about it for a while?
Well, in the case of Barack Obama, it's the sort of thing that, I don't know, how do you want to say it? He wouldn't want to seem as being, getting ahead of himself, really, in this situation, because... You know, when he was at the convention in 2004, I got to cover him a little bit there, and he was supposedly the rising star and everything else. He was still in the Illinois legislature at that point. And there was broad speculation then that, you know, this is a future presidential candidate, future vice presidential candidate, that kind of thing. So you can't, especially in his case, if he seems too ambitious, I would think, you know, that could be problematic for him all of a sudden, because that would be a little chink in his armor. One of the things that he's, you know, got going for him is that he has very little background that could be dredged up and used against him if he does make a presidential bid. So to seem too ambitious in his case in particular would be problematic. He's not even been in the United States Senate for 2 years.
Well, is that the thing? Is that the people, and this is not just him, this is you know, this happens with a lot of people, I think, where they people like him so much because they don't really know anything about him. It's like, okay. So the more, it's like on a date,
how?
Where the longer you talk to a woman, you know, the more likely it is that you're going to say something that she's just going to, is a deal breaker. You're going to inadvertently say something and she's going to decide she's never, ever going to see you again.
You want to get half of your listening audience probably angry with me, so I'm not going to let that happen. But it just think about Colin Powell. In the 2000 election cycle, there was a lot of speculation that he would run, and he felt pretty strongly that he could run, and he had his wife's backing, finally, to go ahead and try to make that run. Well, he came across considerable opposition from the extreme conservatives in the Republican Party who, you know, because especially because of his stance on abortion, would never, you know, support him. So, you know, Obama is a different story in that, you know, he would likely have a lot of the backing of the ultra-liberal part of the Democratic Party because he is. He's very charismatic. He's a great speaker, that sort of stuff. He claims to be middle of the road. You know, he seems to vote that way. But, you know, are the folks that move on going to be really happy with him when they're not all that happy with Hillary at this moment?
This whole thing is just going to be such an ugly shakeout when it happens. As a side note here is about the about Iraq. Bush said on his Saturday radio address, he said, we will be, this is about him talking about Iraq, he said, we will be flexible and, quote, make every necessary change to prevail in Iraq. I mean, at what point is one of those changes just going to be leaving? Because, I mean, is this George W. Bush laying the groundwork for if, because look, if the Republicans get hosed in the elections, if they get hosed in the midterms, he's going to have no support, and there's going to be a real, all of his support and all of the threats that the Democrats have been making about demanding some sort of a pullout from Iraq, those things will all begin to come to fruition, it would seem like. So is he, I mean, are we just going to see, how am I trying to say, if the Democrats end up really taking control in the midterms, is it just going to be one gigantic intra-fighting scorched earth nuclear ground war between them and the Bush administration?
Well,
please let it be so. please.
From a reporter's standpoint, of course, those kinds of things may be very interesting, but I don't believe that there's going to be a huge shift in the Iraq policy on this administration. What we are seeing, especially after these weekend meetings that the strategy sessions that the president had with advisors, we're seeing this notion that, well, the White House has been flexible, and we've always been flexible, actually, about this. And we might set some benchmarks, but we're not going to set deadlines. We're not going to punish the Iraq government if they don't meet any of these benchmarks. That's what we're hearing now. And just remember one thing, Rick.
Yes.
The President of the United States still sets foreign policy by and large. And, you know, Congress can give its okay in certain things, and Congress funds it, but the President sets foreign policy, also says war strategy. So, you know, what you're going to get out of the president, I believe, is, you know, perhaps a good deal of showing flexibility and putting more pressure on the Iraq government to do things. But the goals, I believe, are going to remain the same, and that is to stabilize Iraq and not have any particular deadline for withdrawal.
I can hope, though. I can dream.
Well, you certainly can hope so. And one of the aspects, someone asked me earlier today, well, couldn't Congress just simply cut off funding for the war? And yes, that is true. Congress could cut off funding for the war, but how could that possibly play in the public when you are suddenly saying to the men and women who are over there, we're not going to fund you anymore, so come on home?
It's a fair point. Although I do believe, I mean, really, it does seem likely that if we played this out just right, that we might be able to actually make George W. Bush pound on a podium and stamp his feet angrily like a small child in public. So, I'm just saying, another, you cannot comment on that as a CNN correspondent, but I'm simply saying, from my pundit-like vantage point, it seems likely. All right. Bob Costantini, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
There you go. CNN radio correspondent Bob Costantini. Every day he comes on this show is the best day of his life. He wakes up and dreams about coming on this show.
I don't think he's going to be coming on for much longer.
I don't think so either.
I think he's going to start requesting to not come on.
Okay. He and Pat St. Clair just going to go sit in a room and drink and curse me angrily. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show my wonderful wife, my better half.
Oh.
Let's welcome the lovely Laura to the Rick Emerson Show. Hi, sweetie.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Laura.
How you doing?
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good, Laura. How are you?
I'm
sorry. Let's all soak in the tension for a moment. Let's just all soak in the awkwardness.
Here's the thing. Do people know already? I haven't been listening.
No.
Sarah alluded to it earlier, but actually Jen, Aaron's now wife, Jen, called us. And they were kind of on their way to dash around town doing some stuff. So we ended up talking to her. And so we never really got to talk about the awkwardness. And I talked about how they were, and here's the thing. I don't know who's still in town. I don't know who's not in town. I don't know what family. Boy, Jen's mom came up, and she's a very nice woman. Jen's mom, though, came up to me at the reception. She's like, well, I listened to your radio program on Friday. And I said,
really?
Thank you very much. And she said, I heard a lot of things that will probably make me not listen to your radio program in the future. Because we're talking about the bachelor party and the...
Oh, yeah. What she really doesn't want to hear about her daughter's husband dancing shirtless on a pole.
Aaron just completely wheeling around the pole like a madman. It was all very awkward. And so then here, I got to be real quick, unfortunately, because I got Candy Crowley coming up. But I do want to talk about this. So this is really one of those moments that I wish we had on film just for the... Because Sarah's not really at a loss for words very often. It doesn't happen very often that there's just sort of this...
Laura stumped me. I ran away.
It's just a whole sort of vapor lock that happened.
But she used the whole grape. I've got a smoke excuse.
Yeah, totally.
That's what the non-smokers use.
So,
what
happened.
So great.
So we're at the reception. So we go to Aaron's wedding, and then we're at the reception later. And we're all sitting at a table. And it's me and Laura and Scott Daly and his wife, Maxine, Clyde, Joni DeRoshi, Nate, and Sarah. And so Sarah and myself and Laura are sitting kind of in a row. So it's my wife Laura and then me and then Sarah. And I have to be very delicate here. So I don't even know how to give the background of how this happened.
We were talking
about the various. This is such a hideous thing. We were talking. Somehow we got into the conversation of discussing the various. Bridesmaids, and Sarah was speculating, for whatever reason, openly, loudly, in an outside voice, as to which of the bridesmaids. Why don't you tell the story, Sarah?
I just said I know how you talk, and you on the show you're not aggressive in real life. Like
no,
if you
I'm
think
losing.
That anyone's yeah, you never talk about anybody that you like would think is attractive or cute or anything when we're out in public. But it always
there was no comment about that, by the way, this night. You never said on the show blah blah blah.
I was ill prepared.
Here's what happened is Sarah at one point just blurts out, I know which of the bridesmaids Rick likes, you know.
No, I'm going to say, I know which one you're going to say you want to make her your special friend on Monday.
Yeah, and so Sarah is speculating.
But I said that as a joke.
And then to apologize, though, she said, I just mean, you know, when you usually point out girls to me, it's, hello? And you usually...
I know, and he doesn't. We sit in this booth all the time. The only time we go out is to go shopping when his head's all scabby. That's it.
So Sarah immediately begins talking to my wife, or in the vicinity of my wife, about, like, I know which of those bridesmaids Rick fancies.
Okay, no, she was talking to you, is the
well,
thing.
Well, okay, talking
I'm overhearing,
to... Oh, I'm sorry, like, talking to me while you're right there.
Speculation on what girl you would want to sleep with. I mean, that's not okay in any world. So here's the thing. I think Sarah... needs some lessons on how to be a guy, because like,
no, she was being a guy friend. That's totally what she was doing. She's doing exactly what a guy friend would do. I know which of those bridesmaids you think is hot.
Exactly, and clearly, like, those conversations go on all the time. I'm sure that, you know, in the comfort of, you know, many poker rooms and
at
whatnot,
the Moose Lodge.
Conversations go on. They did not happen in front of wives.
The best part.
I'm sorry, Laura. I'm sorry.
The best part.
I didn't say sleep with. I said special friend.
Uh-huh. Special friend makes it sound like it's a retarded person, by the way. Like, we're going to sit and I'm going to teach them how to play bingo. The best part, though, is that Sarah's talking to me. She's like, I know which of those bridesmaids you want to make your special friend, Rick. And Laura leans in. She goes, what do you mean you know which of the bridesmaids Rick wants to make his special friend? Sarah's like, well, you know, whenever Rick points out girls to me, I know what his type is. That's the best part. Is Sarah's like, Rick, I know what your type is.
Oh, my God. Why are we talking about this?
And so Sarah, in the presence of my wife, having said, Rick, I know what your type is. Laura just, like, leans in and she's like, what is his type?
No, but it was more of eyebrows raised, leaning really close. What's his type, Sarah?
And like, there's no good answer to that. There's totally no good answer
no
to
good
the, like,
answer.
The hot type. That's it. There's no good resolution to this. What's that?
For the record, by the end of the night, she was not the favored bridesmaid. We all agreed that...
All right. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm bleeping that right now. I'm sorry, honey. I apologize. I bleep that.
Okay.
I think maybe in a week or so we can have that conversation. I just don't know who's gathered around the wireless this morning. It's probably best not to openly reveal on the air exactly who everybody found desirable in the wedding party.
Anywho.
Too soon. Too soon. All right. So, in any event, so that was awkward. So the...
No, I want to talk to Laura off the air.
Okay.
Because Rick doesn't stare... He does not check out girls. That was actually me checking out the girl
for
and
me.
Reporting
for
it back
it.
To him.
Reporting, speculating on exactly who it is that I would find desirable based on your the background with me.
I'm cool with that. Yes.
I'm sorry, Laura.
No, I...
Moving on.
With that, it's just okay. you do need to learn the boy rules. There are rules.
Which is to be less of a boy.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Love you.
Love you.
All right. There you go. That's my wife, the lovely Laura. All right. There you go.
Thanks for setting me up for that one.
I had no idea. I had no idea she was calling. I just take the calls that come in, sister. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Let's welcome CNN. Let's use ladies and gentlemen. No, from the Hill. Let's welcome CNN. There you go. Thank you. CNN senior political correspondent Candy Crowley to the Rick Emerson radio program. Candy Crowley, how are you?
I'm fine. I haven't had that good an introduction since I got married.
You know, it would have been better had I anticipated it beforehand and not been just gibbering to my producer right now. Find the West Wing bed. I don't know where it is. So, Candy Crowley, how are you, sister? Thank you for coming on the program here.
Of course,
everybody who watches CNN has seen you for many years, kind of out there. You've got this. Before we do anything else, let's talk about the special that's coming up on CNN, which is tomorrow, right? That's when this is. It's called Two Left Feet, and tell us a little bit about that.
We're actually doing a series of 1-hour documentaries across this week, and mine is about the Democrats, because if you go out into the land and just sit on a city street and say to people, we played free association and said, so I say Democrat, you say, and generally you come away with this, like, what's the matter with these people? Why can't they win elections? What's gone wrong? So this sort of looks at, huh?
Yeah.
You know, sort of that factor.
Well, here's the thing about it is that... the Democrats, as I've said in the past, and this is completely, and everybody, you know, everybody listens to the program kind of knows where my political affiliations are. You know, I'm as big a bleeding heart as you're ever going to find. But, you know, I'm not a Democrat by the same token. And I'll tell you why. Because the Democrats are just hapless. Hapless in every way. I mean, it's an entire party that seems to, and perception paces reality. And so whatever the reality of the situation may be, if people believe that you're weak, they're going to treat you like you're weak. If people believe that you're incompetent, you're going to get treated like you're incompetent. And the Democrats seem, whatever the reality may be, they seem very much to be a party comprised solely and entirely of beta males.
What's funny is, A, you're not going to have to watch this, but B, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, what is the biggest factor really going in these post-9/11 times that run against Democrats? And it's the wuss factor.
Yeah.
It's the, and you know what, that day's, and by the way, I found a bigger bleeding heart liberal than you, and that's George McGovern, an unrepentant, as he says, a bleeding heart liberal. We went to talk to him for this hour long, because while this sort of dates back to communism, pre-George McGovern, really it was the 60s that turned the party, and it's where the trouble began, and part of that was that it began with the Vietnam War protests that were sort of incorporated, the peace movement was incorporated into the Democratic Party with George McGovern. And they have had trouble ever since then, Carter and the Iran hostages and the choppers running into one another, and it just has perpetuated itself to the point where you see Max Cleland in Georgia in 2002 getting defeated as not being committed enough to secure the homeland.
And the guy's a triple amputee.
Right.
Right? Because
that's how powerful it is. It's a very, and you're right, in Washington, perception is reality. In this country, in politics, perception is reality. And the perception about Democrats is that they're wussies, that they are irreligious, if that's a word.
That they're tree-hugging dirt worshippers.
Right.
Yes.
And we talked to nobody but Democrats for this hour, and it is mind-boggling the sorts of things that they will say. Now, the party may have gotten a clue. I mean, they know what these problems are. They know why, with John Kerry and Al Gore, they didn't win a single southern state, and they lost most of the mid and interior west. So they know there's a problem there. Whether they have moved as a national party to fix it, we're not going to know in this election.
Here's the other thing.
This is about Republicans going wrong, not Democrats going right.
Here's a little Rick Emerson observation you can pass along to whoever may or may not be interested in this. Because Democrats, here's two things. A, Democrats are hapless. B, they seem entirely, or in the past have seemed entirely oblivious as to the reasons for their haplessness. But it's not just that they seem like beta males. It's that they're the other thing about Democrats is there's just, and it pains me that I should even have to point this out to them, that they're just so unwilling to fight dirty. You know, here's the thing about Republicans, and I don't mean this as any sort of an ideological or moral observation. This is simply my observation as a sort of political junkie. That, you know what? Republicans, man, everything is a grudge match to them. Everything is a personal fight. Everything is flat-out scorched-earth nuclear warfare. Doesn't matter. Republicans give no quarter, they expect no quarter, and the first time you cross them, they will whack you and your entire family into political hamburger, and they don't care. And Democrats have this sort of quaint notion, and an entirely hobbling and emasculating notion, that they are somehow going to win on the strength of their ideas, which is just not the case in 2006, and hasn't been the case for a long time, will be increasingly less so as time goes on.
Absolutely. And,
so, and
the other half of that is, as somebody said in this, you know, they are all policy and no pulse. And anyone that has ever covered a political race, certainly on the national level, will say to you that voters don't read hundreds of pages of policy papers. They want to know who you are. They want to relate to you in some way, shape, or form. And for whatever reason, Republicans have related better to voters.
Well, the other thing is that the Democrats don't help themselves by distancing themselves. Every time the Democrats get somebody in a position of power or in a position of publicity who might be able to help them or might be able to reverse this image, the Democrats are what a therapist would call self-defeating, because they seem to find a way to keep at arm's length anybody who might be able to. Look at the way they distance themselves from Michael Moore, who whatever one, you know, Michael Moore is very much sort of the you know, the Lee Atwater, one might say, of the left in many ways. You know, he energizes the base, or a guy like Howard Dean. And every time somebody like that comes up, the Democrats, it's like they're embarrassed by it. It's like, well, we're embarrassed by this guy who's actually aggressive and headstrong and goes after what he wants.
Right. And you know, how that leads through to the public, to voters, that leads through as, well, what do they stand for? I mean, what is their sort of guiding principle here? They come out like oatmeal, sort of just mush. And even though, as Donna Brazile, who's in this, talks about, she said, look, you know, Gore and Kerry had excellent positions, but somehow, you know, it comes across to the public as they're too afraid to say what they really think.
Well, and because no matter that, people don't, we all like to pretend that the American populace is shrewd and informed and politically savvy. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of people are either deeply stupid or deeply apathetic or some combination of the both. And the presidential race is sort of a vote for a national dad in a lot of ways.
It's like, I mean, look, Americans are, I mean, the nice way of putting that is that Americans are gut voters.
Yeah.
They, you know, there's sort of this feeling like, I like this guy. And, you know, Brian Schweitzer, who is a Democrat, and the governor of Montana, which is not exactly a left-wing state. In fact, it's voted Republican 9 out of the last 10 presidential races. Brian Schweitzer is hugely successful in Montana because, and you ask him, and he said, you know, it's because they get me and I get them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's conservative on social issues, but quite progressive on other issues. So they just, Democrats have just not been able to find a template and kind of an overarching raison d'etre.
Well, you know, James Carville said, and I know you're kind of under the gun here, you got to go, but James Carville had made an observation. He said that any party that cannot win in this political climate, he said, the Democrats cannot win this. They need to look into selling Herbalife for a living. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And someone said, you know, we have a habit of embracing our inner defeatists.
Oh, they so. Really, look, I just got to say that if the Democrats can't win this election, they need to be kicked out to sea on an ice floe.
Absolutely.
All right? You just pass that along.
The letters over the DNC and start over again.
All right, the special is called Two Left Feet. It premieres on CNN tomorrow, Tuesday, October 24th. Thank you, CNN senior political correspondent Candy Crowley. Thank you, Candy.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, there you go. Candy Crowley, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. Excellent. All right, we got a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up, we have Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth with the AM 970 Solid State Radio Noon News Hour. You stay right there. It's a Rick Emerson program. Don't go anywhere.